Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together. Hey everybody, what is happening? You are back on the Sober Awakening Podcast. I am the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, Tim, and I am here today with my very, very special guest, Lisi, not Leslie, not Lucy, Lisi Kempton. You're the only Lisi I've ever met, actually. That's why it kind of stands out. Lisi Kempton, who is the chief operating officer of her business, Tree Operations. And she comes to us today from a very sober-minded perspective and is going to tell us a little bit about where she is with her relationship with alcohol, what it does to people overall who are trying to connect more with their intuitive self and show up fully in the world, and what she's doing and what she's bringing to the world to help overall bring more light to it. So, Lisi, thank you for being with us today. Did I miss anything that you want me to include there?
No, I don't think you did. Thanks, Tim. I'm happy to be here.
All right. So, first off, tell me a little bit about your business. Let's start there, just so people can get familiar with you and what you do in the world.
Sure. Yeah, my company is Soul Tree Operations, and I do business optimization and management services for ambitious, impact-driven entrepreneurs. I really want to work with entrepreneurs who want to make a difference in the world. And typically, they come to me because their businesses are operationally a mess, and they're trying to scale their business to $1 million or more, and they've kind of reached that revenue ceiling, and they can't figure out why. They're stuck there, and typically it's because they don't have the solid foundations and structures in place to support their growth and expansion. It's not just about generating more leads and sales. You actually have to have a foundation to scale from. So I help them fix those things.
Okay. And now with what you're doing from a business perspective, you do have a spiritual component to this, do you not? Where are you coming from with that direction?
Yeah, so I realized throughout my life and my personal experiences, not only in my own business, but helping other businesses scale as well, and just personal experiences actually outside of business, that you really couldn't achieve your highest potential as a business owner. And I know this is something you talk about a lot too, as a business owner or a leader, or even in your personal life, you can't achieve your highest potential if there's not some personal awareness, some personal responsibility about what you're doing in your life and how you're treating yourself, how you're taking care of yourself. And for me, there was a spiritual component to that for me, to achieving my highest potential. When I wasn't achieving my highest potential, I didn't have that spirituality in my life. And once I started achieving my highest potential, it's because, in part, due to the spiritual component that I implemented and identified and nurtured.
Okay. And do you talk to your clients about this at
all? I do. Yeah, it's
actually spirituality and self-development.
Yeah, all of it. It's actually a part of my framework. So there's a lot of heady stuff in what I do. And I really try to ground people as much as I can in their hearts and in their souls so that they're being more mindful and strategic and intentional in their business and how they're just walking through life. So it, to me, it's a very important part of managing a successful business is that spiritual component and kind of just taking a look at yourself holistically and your business holistically.
Yeah. So Your own spiritual framework, what foundations do you have in place? Because I see Lord Siddhartha Gautama there on the wall behind mm-hmm. you, aka the Buddha, for those who don't know who Siddhartha Gautama was. But where do you come from? What was your kind of spiritual foundation that you were given growing up? Where are you at now?
I'm not sure I would call it a spiritual foundation that I grew up with. I grew up in a strict Mormon home, which actually wasn't healthy for me personally. I didn't mm-hmm. resonate with the teachings. They didn't. I didn't connect with them. And it was challenging living in a house that taught that. Giving credit to my parents, once I came to them when I was 14 and I said, I can't do this anymore. I was pretending to be sick all the time. I didn't want to go to church. They let me stop going. I wish at that point that they would have said, you need to find something else. Like, if it's not this, then let's find something else and let's explore that together and we'll go find that. Because I ended up being lost for a while, which is where the, you know, drug and alcohol entered my life. So Mormonism was not the right thing for me. I wish I had found something else. So it took a long time for me, a lot of pain and suffering and trial and error before I discovered a spiritual path. And it really just evolved over time, you know, meeting people, moving to Boulder, Colorado, was super helpful because there's a lot of that here. And so I just started piecing that together really later, way later in my life. And it helped me, it really helped me, you know, just discover another piece of my puzzle, my personal puzzle.
Okay. Is there a specific faith based system that you gravitate to now, or do you consider yourself spiritually independent? Kind of, for instance, myself, I was born, raised Catholic. I kind of got away from it, explored and have been exploring other things. And now I kind of consider myself under the broad umbrella of mystic Christian. I do the Christianity and the Catholic thing, but I look at it much differently after having explored Buddhist philosophy or the Hindu framework or, you know, hermetic principles, things like that. And then all the quote unquote open-ended spiritual stuff that we've talked about or we've experienced together
yeah.
through some of our work in other arenas. So where are you at? Is there anything you gravitate towards specifically or?
Yeah, I think mysticism for sure is a big component for me. You know, nature is a place where I spend a lot of my time. And I would say that that's my church, is being outside in nature. I stumbled upon Buddhism when I moved to Boulder. I wouldn't say that I explored it extensively, but there is definitely some, you know, temples and ashrams and things around here that I've explored. And that resonated with me for sure. The teachings and what I know about Buddhism, I haven't explored it extensively or studied it extensively. That resonated with me. So at least was a place for me to land and that felt comfortable. So I would say it's a blend probably of those two and or three, because I really would consider nature being a huge component of my spirituality. And my
yeah.
spirituality.
I tell you what, some people think I'm crazy, but every day that I can, I get up in the morning, I go out in my backyard to do my morning meditation, and I plant my feet on the grass all the time. And I literally have a tree on my walking route, kind of that I walk by that I've named Ray due to, well, I named it Ray, but like I'll literally go up and put my hands on the tree and kind of close my eyes if I'm thinking of things that are bothering me or whatever. And I'll just see, kind of do a quick like meditation and kind of see what comes through. And it's amazing how much more connected I feel to my divine guidance when I am in physical contact with nature.
For sure. Yeah, I definitely connect with my spiritual guides more so in nature than anywhere else. And the tree in my front yard is called Fiona.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, this is where people are going to be like, some people watching this will be like, God, he's crazy when he talks about this stuff. But like, I was meditating and I was connecting and then like, you know, with my hands on the tree, and I asked it what its name was.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this sound that started with rare, you know, something like that. It was like human language didn't cut it. So I just shortened it to Ray.
Yeah.
So I call my tree Ray.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah, some people are probably watching this thinking, okay, now he's going to talk about his imaginary friend.
Well, we can talk about that now. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's there's something to that, really.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's a different show.
What's that?
That might be a different show that we can.
Yeah, we could go down a variety of rabbit holes on.
Yeah.
From that angle. So, from a drinking or drug whatever perspective. Where did you start with the use of alcohol and anything else in your life? Probably like most people, you experiment with it when you're younger, you determine how you're going to use it. Where'd you start and where did it go and what kind of role does it play in your life now? Because you are not a sober person like me, like sober came from an addiction background where I was drunk 24/7. You never experienced that. You still drink occasionally. You are in the bucket of people that I call sober-minded. Don't consider yourself as having a drinking problem or a drug problem. You're mindful of your use of it, but it's nothing that you totally abstain from, correct?
Correct, yes. Yeah. But I did, it was a long path to get there. And I actually do have a blue book and I did go to AA and I did have a raging alcoholic.
See, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did not know that. Okay.
Years. In fact, I almost killed myself. So I will tell. I'll start at the beginning.
Lisa, now, in all the time we've chatted, you've never gone there.
Well, because it just wasn't, it just doesn't come up in conversation.
It's okay. It's, it's not, no one's trying to force the story out with a crowbar, but right. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a long path to get here for sure. Now, I was a raging alcoholic for a long time. I would say, I can't remember the first drink, but I was probably 14 or so. And I think I remember having a wine cooler. And then I remember getting drunk at my friend's house with alcohol. And I threw up, when I got home. And that was, probably junior high or between junior high and high school. I don't remember much more abuse or experimentation before that. But when I got to high school, when I was a freshman in high school, I started hanging out with seniors almost right away. And so it just escalated from there. It took off from there. And my parents got divorced somewhere in between there. And I had a fake ID when I was 16. I was going to bars during the week. Like I would come home and go to school. And I had the full makeup on still. Like I just would roll out of bed and go to school. I barely made it through high school because when I was 18, I was still a senior, a month after my 18th birthday. And I was blackout drunk. Like I was able to keep up with the boys. So that was a problem because then I got an ego about that. Oh, I can drink them under the table. I was doing shots and drinking more beer than a lot of my buddies were. But by the time I was 18, it was completely out of control. Blackout drunks, sessions all the time, drinking and driving all the time, being a complete jerk to my friends all the time, not remembering what I was doing or saying all the time. So I finally had a car accident when I was 18. And luckily, my friends were not in the car. I had left them because they were accusing me of being too drunk to drive, which of course I was. And luckily they did not stay in the car with me. They left. And actually I was driving my parents' van. I think that helped. And I didn't make it home. So I crashed the van and I ended up having a spinal cord injury. So I fractured my neck and I was paralyzed long enough that the doctors did not think I would walk again. And that was a long recovery. Because I did have to learn to walk again. I did have to learn to, use my arms and legs and limbs. And I had to wear a halo brace. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but I had to screw the screws in my head and I had to wear a cage. So I had to wear that.
I have a high school friend that got in a car accident and he had to wear a halo for several months.
Yeah. So that was 3 months. So I was in the hospital for a while, probably a rehab for a month or two, learning to use all my faculties again and facilities. And so that was a long It took a while for me to get that all back. Obviously, it was like relearning a lot of that muscle, muscle memory and stuff like that. So you would think that would have stopped me from ever drinking again. And no, it didn't. So I continued. I probably slowed down. I might have stopped for a little while because I had to go, live with my mom for a while. She had moved away. And so I had to live with her at the end of me having the halo brace. I was living with friends. It was so weird. It was such a weird time. But I was living with friends when I had the halo brace on. But I finally got it off. And then I think I went right back, to my life. And then I was hanging out with people that were still doing those things. And so I didn't stop. I mean, it just continued to be, a problem for a long time.
Okay. Yeah. And was there any one catalyzing event that got you to kind of put it under wraps or explore quitting cold turkey? Because you said you have a big book and you went to meetings and did the 12-step thing and all that, which I've done. I've got my big book. I don't have it. It's on my bookshelf over there. But yeah, so what caused that, the actual no more.
Yeah, I would say there was a couple things. I wish I could say the accident was a wake-up call. I'm not sure that that split my path at that point. I think I continued going along. One of the first things that happened was I met my now husband, current husband, when I was 27. And okay. I was still a little bit out of control at that point, and he was not. He was on a very different path and doing a lot of things that I wanted to do, that I envisioned for my life, a lot of very healthy things, volunteering for the Leukemia Society and training people how to ride 100 miles on their bike as fundraisers. And so I wanted that. So that was the first real fork for me that I chose. I was on this other path, and I knew at that point that I would die. I really felt like if I continued on the other path, it was destructive. I was pretty much out of control. Drugs were definitely in the situation or in the scene at that point. And I knew that I needed to take that other path. So I followed him on his path. And it wasn't an immediate change. Like, he definitely experienced my blackouts. And I would wake up in the morning and he'd be upset and crying. And I'd be like, what did I do? And I don't know why he stayed with me, to be honest, because that was, I was not kind. You know, when I was a nasty drunk. I had a lot of pent up pain and emotions that I was, you know, releasing during those times. And the next thing that happened to me is I had some health scares. So I got some diagnosis of some precancer stuff on my cervix. So that was a little bit of a wake up call. We moved to Boulder. I was now around a lot of people that could help me heal my body. And once I started healing my body, then it started healing my mind and my soul. I started losing the craving for alcohol, actually, once I started healing my body, because my body was toxic at that point. How many years had I been going with all of those toxins in my body? So I did find that to be, you know, kind of over the next hump. Like, my body started healing, my cravings reduced. And then the big thing that happened, so that was kind of like, this was kind of like a little bit of a, you know, a path. I decided that I wanted to, my husband and I decided we wanted to have a baby, that I wanted to get pregnant. And I did not want to conceive a child with a toxic body.
Right.
And so that was really the last thing that helped me. It turned the switch off literally for me, Tim. I don't know how, because I know this doesn't happen for a lot of people. But mm-hmm. once I made that decision that I was like, I do not want to bring a child into this world in a toxic body or in a toxic environment, the switch turned off. And I was able to stop drinking.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't really explored this phenomenon, but, you know, I still frequent AA and go to meetings, not as religiously as I did at first. But I've been on this journey for 10 years now that I've been going to AA meetings, and you see people coming in and going out. And there are a lot of women who talk about how they didn't drink during their pregnancy. But once the pregnancy was over, they went right back, and it was probably, you know, it came back worse than what they left. But I always wondered how they could just, with pregnancy, you can switch it off. It's a thing among women. Somehow it's that willpower. It's whatever. It's, you know, a lot of women truly do not drink during pregnancy that had problematic drinking before, and then they go back to it. But pregnancy, no. And I'm sure there's a lot out there who do drink during pregnancy. But
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I see that pregnancy does seem to have that effect. You have a very rare situation, it sounds like, to where you just kind of lost the desire for it with your pregnancy.
Yeah, I really did. And then, unfortunately, what happened after that was health problems started popping up because my body had been so abused for so many years. And so that helped, to be honest, with me continuing to disregard alcohol, because I just didn't feel well already. And to then mm-hmm. have a drink, that made me feel worse. And I'm trying to raise, you know, I have a newborn and I have a baby, you know, and then he was a toddler. And then, you know, so it never fit into my life after that, really, you know, as a main component of my life.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is you talk about healing your body. Mm-hmm. And myself, when I quit drinking, it was quite miraculous. I dropped 70 pounds. The depression and anxiety were not a total thing of the past. They never are in our human experience, I think. But we, depression, anxiety really toned down. I had gout that I have never experienced again. And I actually was diagnosed with Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune issue, which now, as of the last 2 years, I don't need. My numbers are fine. I didn't have to have my thyroid out or anything. Now, I've done a lot of things to, you know, kind of promote that in the wellness arena, more of the holistic stuff. But you know, you take alcohol out of your body and let it get back to its natural state a little bit more, and some really miraculous things can happen, you know?
Yeah, agreed. I think if anybody's experiencing health problems, the first thing they should do is eliminate alcohol. It's just, it's not good for you in so many ways.
Yes. So what I will tell people is, you know, if there's nothing, I don't preach don't drink, right? What I tell people is, though, if you are drinking, you cannot be the best version of yourself if you're drinking regularly. So if you feel stuck, don't drink. If you are unhappy about anything, don't drink about it. Drinking is not going to help anything at all. You want to lose weight? Stop drinking. You know, you want to get a new job, you're unhappy at your job, you want to move into a new career, work on that, stop drinking for 3 to 6 months. See what happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I agree. I think that people should just try it. I think, you know, just try it. If you're having those problems or like you, all the things you mentioned, just try it and see if it makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you obviously, after you were pregnant and you had your son, you went back to drinking and it just didn't stick anymore for you. Just lost. Yeah. Wasn't something you consciously had to work at giving up.
No, I'd say it just lost, besides the fact that I just didn't feel well. And so then I couldn't take care of my son well. And then I couldn't be a good wife. And I, you know, all those things that really helped me to just lose the desire for it because I just didn't feel well. And it's just continued to be that way. And I've just continued to drink less and less to the point where, you know, I think I went 6 months, you know, this last year. I don't really think about, there's no schedule, but right. You know, when you and I started talking about doing this podcast, I thought, when I do have a drink, which is really rare these days, like I said, maybe I went 6 months, it's been, you know, it'll be a few months. Why do I even have that one drink? So I feel like there's still areas for me to explore, like, why am I having that one drink even once in a while? Is it a taste thing? Like you and I talked about this a bit, like, what is the reason? Because I don't think that I need to or should or want to, for that matter. So, and I'm not a peer pressure person these days. I'm too old for that. So that's not it. If people are drinking around me, I don't feel pressure like, oh, I need to have a drink or they're going to think I'm weird. I could care less what people think if I don't have a drink. So that's not something that I can explore on this podcast, really, but I'm going to explore that. Like, why even that one drink whenever, once a year, once every 6 months, once every 3 months? Like, why? What is, you know, the reason why I'm even having that one drink? So I'm glad we had that conversation because I want to explore that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell people now, I allow myself to do the non-alcoholic beer.
Mm-hmm.
I will do that. Some people in the AA sobriety community, they will be like, no, nothing.
Yeah.
That'll be a trigger for you. I've done it now for 2 years. It took me a minute to get there to let myself try it, but it has not been a problem for me whatsoever. Yeah. So it's okay for me. But it's like I told you, non-alcoholic beer has gotten pretty damn good in the last few years. It's not like the old days of, I drink this stuff and it's pretty much like, this tastes like what I remember real beer tasting like. So if you can get that out of non-alcoholic beer, like, why do you need to have the alcohol?
Yeah, agreed.
Unless you like the alcohol.
Yeah.
Which, that's okay, you know, but just realize it for what it is. You know, hey, when I started drinking, I loved the way alcohol made me feel. It made me funnier and more courageous, and I could talk to girls more easily and, you know, all that stuff. It was super juice in the beginning until, you know, it wasn't.
Until it wasn't, yeah.
Until it wasn't. It just kind of happens that way. So let me ask you, let me back up with this a little bit. You recently celebrated 25 years of marriage. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
All right. So along those lines, my wife and I will be coming up on our 25-year anniversary.
Awesome.
So your spouse, you mentioned that you were drinking when you met him.
Yeah.
How does alcohol affect your interpersonal relationships in that arena? And I tell you this, when I was younger, I met my wife and it had to be a soul level thing because every time, and there weren't many. I mean, I dated a lot of girls. Nobody really long term through college or shortly thereafter when I was in school or even when I got out. Nothing long term, but there were a couple that came along that could have been distinct long term partners. And as soon as I realized that, like,
hey, man, if this one leaves the station, the train might not stop, which was pretty quick intuitively. I was like out the door. I was like, bye. It wasn't that I didn't like them or they weren't wonderful people. There was something about, because the second I go down this road, the party ends. I won't be, you know, I won't be able to drink. I didn't think of it like that. Yeah. But looking back, it inhibited me a lot. And I tell my wife, you know, you weren't the first seemingly perfect person I met. You're the first one God didn't let me run from. Like, I tried to disappear after a week or two from her. She didn't chase me. And then the universe kept, like, putting us in the same place and stuff until I finally was like, fine, I'll let myself do this. Yeah. And sure enough, 7 months later, we were engaged. You know, did you notice any effect alcohol had on your early relationship ability to be in those? Because it sounds like you said you met your husband when you were 27.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah. I got married when I was 27. I was 25 when I met my wife and finally gave in to the universe, you know.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, alcohol was certainly a part of the early, you know, relationships before my husband. Mm. They weren't healthy relationships. In fact, they were toxic and even abusive, I would say. But we were in the same place. Whoever I was dating was in the same place. So it was a yucky relationship. It wasn't healthy. Or I would say when I had my car accident, though, that I do think that was although we were both drinking together, he wasn't a toxic person. And that could have been a different relationship if I had control of my alcohol at the time. He didn't leave me after my car accident, but we didn't last long after my recovery. So I would say that I was just in unhealthy relationships, dating other people that were drinking the same way. So that was, you know, of course it affected my relationship. It was toxic. And then you heard the story, you know, about when I met my husband. He was not drinking the same way I was. He definitely has never had a problem with alcohol or drinking excessively. And so that certainly should have terminated that relationship. I mean, it was bad. And I don't know why he stayed with me. Maybe there's a soul connection there as well. There was no reason for him to stay with me unless he saw, he must have seen something, right? He must have seen when I wasn't that way, the person, he could get the glimmer of the person underneath all that and the person in all of that. And so that must have kept him in there.
Yeah.
Luckily, thankfully.
Yeah. Here you are 25 years later, yeah. And it's, you know, 25 years of marriage, man. It's, I don't know one person who, if they're being honest, will tell you it's, you know, that it's rainbows and lollipops all 25 years. I mean, it's what everybody says. It takes work and effort. And, you know, I don't know if there's any other way I'd do it though. And I would not have been able to achieve my level of sobriety if it was not for my wife and my daughter. You know, I needed something out there to ground me and hold me accountable. I've reached a point now to where I don't want to go back to being what I was being, regardless of, God forbid, something happened to my wife tomorrow, I would not drink. You know, I'm very resolute in that. But yeah, you know, it's been a journey. So your husband, you guys, everything, obviously 25 years, it's great, great now. Is there a turning point there when you had your son and did things just kind of get better after that when you stopped drinking?
I mean, not all, you know, of course we had our struggles and challenges. That's just the way it is. But we were committed to our own personal development and to the development of our relationship. And a lot of the driving factor for us to become healthy individuals and then healthy as a couple was we didn't want to pass that on to our son. So that became a motivator for us. You know, once we started doing the personal development work, we realized that we would pass that on, that a lot of it was passed on to us from our parents, right? Our stuff and our baggage. And we didn't want to pass it on to our son. So we did the best that we could to be as healthy as we could so that we could bring our son up in a healthy, loving environment so that he could have the best chance of being the best version of himself and achieving his highest potential. So that became a motivator for us for sure, is to, you know, being the best parents to our son.
That's great.
It wasn't always easy. Sure.
Yeah.
It's a tough mode.
All right. So let's switch gears here a little bit and talk about your intuitive development and the spiritual stuff, if you don't mind. From my perspective, I don't know if you've heard any of my other stuff. I've talked about it online and in some of the podcasts I've been on. But when I was young, I had a couple of otherworldly, I'd call them highly intuitive, like, experiences. And then as I got older and drank, you know, that sensitivity that I seemed to have at a young age went away. And it was always there. in the background, but it's like my guidance and my intuition got very, very quiet. You know, it was very, very dim and damp. And then I got sober and my physical body got better. And then all of a sudden, I would say like 6.5 years ago now, I got a job with my current employer. They're based in California, so they do all these, you know, wellness things and everything. And
nice.
They're a little bit more holistic with some of the wellness activities they promote. And so we have a program where if I do so many different wellness activities over the course of the year, I accumulate points. You get so many points, you get a reduction on your health insurance premiums. And one of them was meditation. And I thought, oh yeah, I can just meditate. It was meditate for 30 days in a row, 10 minutes a day. They provided you the app and everything. And I thought I can meditate for 10 minutes a day. No problem. Just listen to somebody telling me to chill out and relax. Right. I did that 10 minutes a day for 30 days and I was hooked. And then I started having this crazy fascination and curiosity with near-death experiences because I drive around for work. So I'm listening to a lot of stories about near-death experiences. And then I get into all these, you know, more alternative or esoteric channeled works. And then I start exploring some things on my own, like the good Christians out there are going to run for their holy water. But like, I got a dowsing pendulum and I was like, I got a deck of tarot cards. You're just, that's a big Christian no-no right there in some circles. But I was like, I feel okay with it, which I never got into any of those things. But then I started, you know, communicating more through automatic writing or just talking to my higher self and seeing what came back when I was in meditation. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And then obviously, I went to high school with our mutual friend, Vanessa, who runs, obviously, Earth Magic Academy, which how we met doing her courses. And I got to a point where I was like 3-4 years ago, I was like, I think I need to explore this with more structure. And so I saw her advertise on Facebook. I got into her programs and now here we are. And now that the alcohol is gone from an intuitive perspective, I tell people, I mean, I meditate every morning and it's hard to follow your guidance, but the guidance is always there. You always know what to do if you learn how to listen. You always know. You just have to learn for God, higher self, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. You got to learn how to listen to it, and it is never going to steer you wrong. That was kind of my development. What about you?
Yeah, I would say when I was younger, I had some experiences that I would say, like knowing things were going to happen or strange, unexplainable things happening that scared me. And so I shut that down. I remember those things happening and being scared. I also remember hearing stories from my mom and you know, sisters and grandma, things that were happening to them later on, you know, so I was like, oh, well, maybe this is in our, something that's in our family, that we have some spiritual, you know, connection or some sort of connection to source or again, you know, like you were saying, God, whatever you want to call it. But it was definitely an evolution for me later in life, in my adult years, as I started healing my body and then finding alternative you know, practitioners and finding that a lot of these people had a spiritual practice. And then that was a big part of it is healing, you know, yourself and your soul and having a connection to something outside of you, some source. And it wasn't really until I met Vanessa that I started developing my intuition and learning to trust it again and to believe it. And my family has a problem with making decisions. So that became a really valuable asset and a tool for me to be able to trust that because I was able to connect with my higher self and make decisions more confidently than I had before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really in the past, I think I met Vanessa 5 years ago. So it's really been in the past 5 years that I've, you know, taken it to the next level. You know, I was kind of, like I said, dabbling in going to the Buddhist temple in Boulder and meditating. You know, I had started a meditation practice, but beyond that, I hadn't really nurtured it or developed it, you know, much beyond, you know, meditation here and there and ashram here and there. Yeah, Vanessa and Rhett, really the ones who taught me how to develop that and to trust it and believe in it.
Yeah.
That's a big part of my life now, for sure.
Yeah. And do you follow that guidance like almost daily or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to make decisions daily.
So right.
I'm always tapping into that and asking what's, you know, yes or no, or where to go. I think you, I don't know how you would you had described it when we and I had this conversation, but it was, yeah, it's just getting that answer. Like, am I going right or left?
That's exactly, yeah.
It's as simple as that, right or left, yes or no, you know?
Yep. You know what? I don't know anybody out there who, if you told them, like, people think that when you get into your intuitive or quote unquote psychic self, that somehow you're going to know how to read people's mind, or you're going to be able to tell the winning lottery numbers or tell the future. I haven't ever seen too many people that experience that. It's literally just learn how to listen to your gut. And who, in every now present moment, when they're faced with a choice that has some weight in their life, does not want to know whether it's more beneficial to go right or left.
Yeah.
And know it right then.
Yeah. And I used to question that decision. I used to wonder or worry a lot, if I make that decision to go right, was that the right decision? And now I know that it absolutely is, you know, that I am being guided down the right path. And it's not always going to be the easy path. Sometimes it's the harder path, but it's the path that I need to take for in my life, for my evolution and for my, you know, development. You know, personally, professionally, you know, whatever it is, it's they're always going to be the right path for me. Yeah.
So that's professionally, what's that?
It's a relief to actually have that confidence in my decisions now.
And since you started employing a greater degree of intuition into your everyday practice regarding both personal decisions or business decisions, have you ever regretted anything that you've done after following your intuition?
No, no. Okay. Like I said, even though it might have been a harder path, it was something that I learned a valuable lesson from it that helped me, you know, just became a piece of the puzzle for me, helped me develop better personally or professionally. So it was some lesson that I needed to learn or some experience that I had to have. And it was never I never felt like it was for naught or like, oh, that was, you know, something that I wish that I would have avoided. That hasn't happened to me. Even my car accident, you know, I look at that for sure as a huge thing that helped me. It helped shape the person that I am today. I had to get through a very challenging situation, you know, to learn how to walk again. It was not an easy feat, you know, and that shaped who I am today. So I would never even take that off the table.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sometimes some of the worst things that happen to us are the greatest catalysts that we have. And I think, you know, that's, you know, I don't think that'll be a foreign concept to anybody listening.
No.
But that is so true. Now, would you say in the last few years, since you have been trusting and learned to trust your intuition now, how has your own personal, how do you feel about your level of success that you've been able to achieve?
So I'm really clear. I feel successful in my personal life, 25 years of marriage, and I feel successful in my business because it's been over 20 years that I've been doing this work. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. So let's talk about your business a little bit. You talked about what you do from a 30,000 foot perspective, but you said you incorporate spiritual and self-development aspects into maybe your coaching or what you suggest to your clients. Where do you go with your clients when you make these suggestions or you offer them advice along those lines?
It depends on where they want to go, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I don't ever force it or push it. I invite it for sure. But the whole self pillar of my framework is about understanding your personal operating system, you know, as best as you can. So you know what you need to succeed and to, you know, be the best version of yourself or to achieve your highest potential. And so I just invite them to explore different things that might be happening in their life. Like for sure, when you're expanding your business or when you're an entrepreneur, I mean, anybody needs this, but we're specifically talking about entrepreneurs and scaling their business. You need to have a self-care routine. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means to them. Is that meditation? Is that getting massages? Is that sitting in nature? Is that, you know, so it really is up to them to decide what self-care means for them and what works for them. And then I also help them identify things that they might be doing in their life that aren't serving them anymore. And that could be foods that they're eating. It could be alcohol that they're drinking. It could be people that they're spending their time with. You know, there's a lot of people that don't understand or realize that they're in toxic relationships or spending time with people that are draining their energy. You know, they will leave the time with them and go, oh, I just felt horrible.
Yeah.
And I don't feel well after being with that person. And so I try to get them to just awareness, right? Awareness around all of that. What is affecting you? in your life? And then conversely, like, what are the things that you should be spending more of your time doing? Who are the people you should be spending more of your time with? Like, it's really just kind of across the board and what they, awareness, really, it's about awareness. You know, what are the things that you should be doing more of and less of to help you mm-hmm. in your business and your personal life? It's not just, you know, obviously business related.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What's your typical type of client? Is there any type of industry you gravitate more towards? You know, and how large are your clients' businesses usually?
Yeah, these days, well, I started working in Silicon Valley at tech startups in the 90s. Okay. I went through the dot-com boom there.
Yeah.
That was my initial entry into the business world, Silicon Valley tech startups. I also worked at a Fortune 500 and some other medium-sized businesses there. Once I left corporate, I just landed with coaches and consultants initially. I did work with some other startups along the way, and that's where I am now is, you know, really online service-based businesses, which typically tend to be coaches and consultants that, you know, really want to make a difference in the world. I've worked with six-figure entrepreneurs and seven-figure plus entrepreneurs. I've discovered that really the ones that that need me and that are looking for me are making around $250,000 a year, and they have their sights set on $1 million business, okay. and they're stuck. They can't figure out how they're stuck at the 250K, and they don't know why. And they're starting to burn out, and that's when they start looking for me. Like, I don't feel I'm burning out. I'm working too many hours. I can't seem to move the needle. You know what's going on here? So that's kind of where I've landed now, is that group of people, online service-based entrepreneurs, want to make a difference in the world, and they're stuck around the 250K mark. Yeah.
Okay, great. So with all that being said, if people are watching this and they're like, boy, I really love her story. She's got so much on the ball and I love what she's done with her life and I want to be just like Lisi. You know, where would you tell them to start?
If they wanted to work with me or if they wanted...
Not necessarily. Well, we can get to that in a second. But like, if they just wanted to start on a path toward greater wellness, greater intuitive awareness, where would you tell them to start? Like, are there any practices you would recommend they could start today, tomorrow, that would start them in the right direction?
Yeah, I would say meditation for me is always a good place to start. And even mm-hmm. if it's a minute at a time, and there's, you know, so many apps now, Aura, I like the Aura app, A-U-R-A. And there's so many different things on there. There's coaching sessions, there's meditations, there's, you know, clearing, all kinds of things. So that would be an easy place to start. And then I would also invite them to do the practice that I just described. Like, really have awareness around what you're putting into your body, where you're spending your time, who you're spending your time with, you know, what kinds of things are you doing? There's a lot of things we have to do in our lives that we can't eliminate, you know, that are causing stress and disease. But, you know, can you reduce that in some form or fashion? When I was really sick for a while, I hired somebody to cook for me because I wasn't even able to cook healthy meals. And so can you invest in yourself in certain ways? Maybe you're hiring a house cleaner once in a while. You know, there's a lot of things that I think people don't feel like they're allowed to do or can do, you know, in their lives to help them be a better person or be a better, you know, achieve their highest potential. So I would say just awareness around that. Like, where are you spending your time? Can you change any of those things? Even one thing, one thing could make a difference in your life. You know, if you could change that and that made you feel better, then that's a start for sure.
Okay. And from a professional perspective, how do they get in touch with you if they're like, hey, I want to talk to Lisi about, because I'm feeling stuck, like you just talked about.
Yeah.
Where do they find you? How do they get in touch with you?
Probably my website might be the best place to go. It's soultreeops.com, SoulTreeOps. com, or email is lisi@soultreeops.com. Yeah, that would be a good place to start. And I'd be happy to talk to them about any of this, even if it's not business related and they're not interested in scaling their business to, you know, $1 million or more a year. If they just wanted, if something I said resonated with them, a health journey that they're on, because I have had to explore that a lot. I've spent a lot of time, energy, and money in alternative therapies when traditional medicine didn't have answers for me and couldn't give me answers. So that's an area I'd be happy to have conversations with people about, or just taking that first step to helping them, you know, feel better I would love to explore any of that with them. It's all open.
Great. So let me ask you, in closing, is there anything we haven't talked about, any words of wisdom, piece of advice you'd like to throw out there into the universe for the Sober Awakening family that you would like them to know or hear from you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, really, I want it to be maybe just the awareness around, alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And really, and how that affects people's lives in so many ways that they might not realize. And you and I touched on it in the beginning. If you don't feel well, if you don't feel well in your marriage, your relationship, your health, your job, any of those things, just try. If you're not sober or you're still drinking, even if it's not a lot, it could just be a weekend drinker. Try to eliminate alcohol from the picture for a while. Couple weeks, a month, and see if that makes you feel better. Because I do feel like it complicates things. It just made me inflamed too. So I just became more irritable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just being more irritable and not being as patient as I wanted to be, not being able to take, life's challenges very gracefully.
Right.
It didn't allow me to do that. Even a little bit of alcohol, when I was starting to taper off, I was still noticing that.
Yeah. Alcohol is a very toxic, quote unquote, low vibe, dense substance. And if you're putting it in your body, you are going to attract dense, low vibe, icky things to your life. That's just how it works.
Yeah. And that's been my experience. And I know you feel this way too. There's no judgment around that. If people are drinking, it's just an invitation to try it. It's an invitation to try it. If you've tried other things and nothing's helping and you don't feel well, depression, anxiety, I had all those things as well. And it just made it worse. It just amplified everything negative in my life.
Yeah. I think you touch on something important, and I try to keep reminding people is there's no judgment if you're a drinker. My wife is a drinker.
Yeah, my husband
is. I'm around drinkers all the time. I do a lot of things that still aren't great for me. I eat too much sugar. Mm-hmm. I do all kinds of stuff that isn't good. But alcohol is one thing that is very easy for, should be very easy for people to cut out if they are having a rough time. And then cut that out, you just might be surprised at how good things go. And then that might tell you something.
Yeah. And if you can't cut it out, then that's something to be curious about. There's an invitation there to explore that. Why can't I cut it out? Why don't I want to cut it out of my life? I have the same question on my plate right now, too. Even though I don't drink very often, why am I still having that one drink once in a while? So I'm going to explore that, and I invite other people too as well.
Great. Well, I'll be interested to know in another 6 months or whatever how you feel about that then.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah. So anyway, Lisi, thank you so much for being here. We'll go ahead and wrap up now. Thank you so much. You have been totally authentic. I did not know that you had quite the alcohol history that you did. Thank you for sharing and being so genuine.
Of course.
Loved having you here. Love the light you bring to the world. I told you, you have a very Stevie Nicks energy about you. And yeah. I just think that's awesome. Congratulations again on 25 years of marriage to your husband. He is, I know you feel you're fortunate. I'm sure he feels fortunate as well. And much love to you and your family. And I'll look forward to wherever we all go in the future.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me, Tim. It was a pleasure being here.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening Podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.